Yeah, it's all about keeping an additive positude. Positude additive.
Something like that. It is Friday. Friday on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, radio program of record. Thank you for joining us. Doesn't seem like a nice August morning. A little blustery out there. But hope you're going to have a wonderful weekend ahead. The Democratic Convention is over. We're going to get to it in just a second. Before we do, I want to start local because the local story of the week is that horrifying carjacking and killing of an 80-year-old woman, Ruth Dalton, by an 8-time felon who has an earlier conviction for killing someone with a car. That is what Jamaad Haynes now stands accused of doing to Ruth Dalton, violently carjacking her and then, according to a witness, deliberately backing over her as she lay in the street. He then, with her dog in the back of the car, drives to a parking lot on Beacon Hill and, according to witnesses, stabs her dog to death and throws it in a trash can. He apparently had never met this woman before. But, hey, he wanted her car. This guy has been in and out of prison and mental institutions for most of his adult life. Here is what Como 4 has discovered about Jamaad Haynes' prior arrests, including his time at Western State Hospital.
Police call the suspect a tremendous danger to the public. They also say that he resisted officers when he was taken into custody and then didn't make any statements to investigators. I've been digging into his criminal history. In that, I found concerns from a psychologist who said that the suspect was a high risk for committing future crimes.
Jamaad Haynes is accused of the shocking murder of 80-year-old Ruth Dalton. Police say it was a random carjacking where Haynes is accused of running Ruth over, then stabbing her dog Prince to death. Now we're learning about his criminal history, which started 3 decades ago. In the 90s, Haynes was convicted of multiple crimes, including vehicular homicide. He served less than 2 years in prison, but was back in custody not long after. In 99, he was convicted of robbery, and in 2003, assault. We learned that assault was on a prison officer here at the Monroe Correctional Facility. He allegedly stabbed a guard with a 12-inch shank. That case prompted a judge to send Haynes to the Western State Hospital for mental health treatment.
Someone want to explain to me why someone this volatile and someone this violent was out of prison in the first place? So he was sent to Western State after stabbing a corrections officer at Monroe. All right, what happened then?
There, a psychologist's report noted that Haynes had signs of psychosis and paranoia and, quote, if he discontinues his medication, which he says he will most likely decompensate in a rather short period of time. The report went on to say Haynes is, quote, high risk for committing future criminal acts jeopardizing public safety. Haynes was sent back to prison where he stayed until 2017. He was released, complied with the terms of his supervision until that expired in 2018. Court records show Haynes hasn't had any new criminal cases in Seattle until he was arrested for Ruth Dalton's murder this week. The case has rightly outraged many in the city and has become a flashpoint in the region's fight to control crime, with both candidates for Washington governor weighing in on X. Dave Reichert saying, quote, years of unchecked lawlessness and tying the hands of our officers has gotten us to this point. And Bob Ferguson, who is currently the attorney general, thanking Seattle police and saying the person responsible needs to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
I'd like to know why he was out. Again, we're talking about an 8-time felon who stabbed, who had already killed someone with a car, who then stabbed a corrections officer at Monroe and was sent to Western State, and they sent him back to Monroe and let him go. They sent him back to prison and let him go. This is, again, just an example of everything that is wrong with Washington State's approach to criminal justice. And this should be seen as the case that changed all that. I have a feeling it won't. You know, you have a 8-month pregnant Korean businesswoman who's shot and killed on 4th Avenue, downtown Seattle, as she's in the turn lane waiting to drive to her restaurant that she and her husband, who was in the car with her, who was wounded, run together or used to run together. That didn't wake the community up. Again, random, savage, vicious act of violence. And nothing's going to get done until we change the people who are there. Nothing's going to get done. Seattle has started, but they need to pick up the pace. They need to pick up the pace. All right, you got 10 minutes after 8. Let us go to Kamala Harris last night. I watched her speech in full. It was, to her credit, not as long as Joe Biden's. It was came in at about 36 minutes. Little light on details. Steve Moore just gave you some of the details that were certainly missing from last night's speech. Much of it was also biographical, like when she described her work as a prosecutor.
I fought against the cartels who traffic in guns and drugs and human beings, who threaten the security of our border and the safety of our communities.
If they threaten our border so much, then why have you followed a policy that has made cartels so much stronger? I mean, talk about it. No sense of self-awareness, no sense of irony here. You have all but opened the border, and you just hear in your speech are talking about how cartels are exploiting our border to traffic in drugs, people, and other assorted contraband.
And I will tell you, these fights were not easy. And
they're not easy. They're not happening, is the problem.
Neither were the elections that put me in those offices. We were underestimated at practically every turn. But we never gave up, because the future is always worth fighting for.
Okay. It's a good applause line, but may I just remind everybody, Kamala Harris is a San Francisco liberal running in a one-party city for DA, and then running in a one-party state. All the major offices, all the statewide offices are held by Democrats. In a one-party state for attorney general. A race she very nearly lost, by the way. She just barely won it by half a percentage, one half of a percentage point. So even when she's running in a heavily Democrat-dominated state, she barely wins office. And then she wins election to the Senate because they have a top two system. They're running against another Democrat. So that's the context that needs to be taken into account here. Oh, and where is she on the border?
After decades in law enforcement, I know the importance of safety and security, especially at our border. Last year, Joe and I brought together Democrats and conservative Republicans to write the strongest border bill in decades. The Border Patrol endorsed it. But Donald Trump believes a border deal would hurt his campaign. So he ordered his allies in Congress to kill the deal. Well, I refuse to play politics with our security. And here is my pledge to you. As president, I will bring back the bipartisan border security bill that he killed, and I will sign it into law.
Okay. Shall we talk for just a moment about what that bill does? It establishes a tolerance policy on illegal immigration, a daily tolerance policy. As long as it stays below 2,000 people a day illegally crossing the border, as long as it stays below 2,000, it's all right. But when it gets above, I think it's 2,500, then they're going to start increasing enforcement at the border. It's a freaking tolerance policy on illegal, on slow motion illegal immigration. Can't believe that any Republican in his right mind was negotiating for this. But again, this is what sometimes happens. You got to keep your eye on Republicans when they go back to Washington, D.C. Sometimes strange things happen. And Donald Trump did exactly the right thing. So, anyway, just thought you should have the context behind that. All right, now let's go from the border, which remains chaotically defended in the United States. And by the way, credit Donald Trump for being at the border. Not only that, a dangerous spot on the border. He had to move at one point. Kamala Harris only made one border appearance as border czar. And yes, she was the border czar. And that was to a very safe indoor area. She never had so much as a conversation. The border czar never had so much as a conversation with the head of the Border Patrol. And she's going to be the person to get our border controlled? I don't think so. This is all going to be coming out here. Here is Kamala Harris talking about Ukraine and then pivoting to the Middle East. Notice how differently she speaks about our commitment to Ukraine versus Israel. Have a listen.
As president, I will stand strong with Ukraine and our NATO allies.
Okay, good, strong. Good, strong, forthright defense. No qualifiers here. Just, I will stand strong with Ukraine and our NATO allies. That's impressive. All right.
With respect to the war in Gaza,
yeah,
President Biden and I are working around the clock because now is the time to get a hostage deal and a ceasefire deal done.
Oh.
And
why aren't we hearing... Now, she's going to say, oh, and I do believe Israel has the right to defend itself. Where is we stand strong with Israel's right to defend itself and to eradicate Hamas? No, doesn't quite get to that level.
Let me be clear. And let me be clear. I will always stand up for Israel's right to defend itself. And I will always ensure Israel has the ability to defend itself because the people of Israel must never again face the horror that a terrorist organization called Hamas caused on October 7.
Okay, so why not simply say, in Israel's war against a terrorist organization, Hamas, we stand strong with Israel? Why is that so hard? Why is that so difficult? She could say that, but no. No, she says, no, we need a ceasefire.
Unspeakable sexual violence and the massacre of young people at a music festival. At the same time, what has happened in Gaza over the past 10 months is devastating. So many.
And Hamas is committing a war crime by putting civilians in front of their fighters. Is she going to say that?
Innocent lives lost. Desperate, hungry people fleeing for safety over and over again. The scale of suffering is heartbreaking.
Still no blame of Hamas.
President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination.
Oh, everybody's a winner. Everybody comes out ahead. Here is what moral clarity would have been here, okay? Moral clarity would have been, and the Palestinian people can move forward knowing that the obstacle to peace between Israel and the Palestinian people, namely the terror group Hamas, is no more. That's what she should have said. She should have clarified that Palestinians won't have autonomy, that Palestinians won't have any shot at freedom or a homeland as long as groups like Hamas, terrorists like Hamas, that don't want Israel to be safe, that don't want Jews in Israel at all, are not in the picture. She couldn't quite get to that, could she?